Hello and welcome to Leanne Ward Nutrition, a podcast where you will find expert advice on all things health and nutrition related. Each week, we will discuss my three niche areas of gut health, emotional eating, and sustainable fat loss. My hope for this podcast is to cut through the BS online and show you real, practical, and evidence-based messages around nutrition so you can live your best life, day in and day out. So sit tight, buckle up, and let's get started on today's podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Venue 3S, Garmin's all-new hybrid smartwatch that is a perfect blend of function and style. Purpose-built with advanced health and fitness features and the ability to make calls and send texts, the Venue 3S is more than just a fitness smartwatch. It's your personal on-wrist coach there to support your every goal. Head to garmin.com.au to find out more. On today's podcast episode, I'm joined by IBS expert Chelsea McCallum, who is an online dietitian based in Brisbane, Australia. Chelsea specializes in irritable bowel syndrome and the low FODMAP diet. On this bloating episode, today we discuss what bloating is, what's normal versus abnormal, when bloating might be a serious health concern, what the main causes of bloating are, how we can resolve bloating, how we can fix constipation. We also discuss gut dysbiosis, laxatives and colon cleanses, and our tips for bloating sufferers when they're eating out. Finally, we end with supplements like probiotics and Chelsea's top tips to improve bloating quickly. So let's dive into today's potty, and don't forget to share it with your friends and family who you think would benefit from this episode. Welcome back to the podcast, Chelsea. We're very excited to have you back on today.
Thank you so much. I am thrilled to be here as well.
And the crazy thing is, it's practically May this year. So how's the year been treating you so far?
Crazy to think that it is May. I think physically in May, mentally, am I in February yet? I don't know. Yeah. This year has gone so quickly and has been incredibly busy. And, you know, you hear people say all the time that every year of life gets busier. This one has been accelerated. How are you feeling?
I feel the same. And when you hear the people say that, you think, no. And then you go through it and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, of course. And having two little ones running around, I'm sure time just evaporates.
Yeah, my little bub's 9 months, 9 months old. Like, I don't even know if you can call her a baby anymore. She's like on the move pretty much. She like stands up on the couch. She's like eating solids. I'm like, where did that go? She was like a little tiny baby. Feels like a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, Matilda, you're a little too independent right now.
Yeah,
Slow down.
I know. Go back to being a baby, please. Now, Chelsea, if our listeners aren't aware, you joined us back on, I actually had to scroll back to find out when it was, but it was episode 95 of this potty, and we talked all about IBS and the low FODMAP diet. So that was a wonderful chat, and you provided so much value. So if our listeners are struggling with IBS or considering or have heard about or are interested in the low FODMAP diet, that is certainly the episode to go back to, number 95. But today we're actually going to focus purely on bloating because we were chatting just before the potty, and it's such a common topic, particularly for women, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think absolutely anyone listening can relate to feeling bloated at some point in their life and feeling really frustrated with it. Other people deal with it every single day. It's that chronic, relentless bloat. So a great topic to talk through, you know, what is normal, what is not normal, what you can be doing very practically right now, what are the long-term strategies, and so much more.
I love it. All right, so let's dive in, and we're going to start by giving our listeners, I guess, a simple, if there is one, definition of what bloating is.
Of course. So bloating refers to that internal sensation where you might feel like you have swallowed a balloon, or maybe you feel like you are 9 months pregnant without, of course, being pregnant. And it can be triggered by so many different things. On the flip side, we have distension, which is very similar but slightly different. Distension refers to the physical increase in girth of your abdomen. So you could say that I'm feeling bloated, but maybe you don't physically look any different, but internally you don't feel right. You could have the distension as well, which is that physical increase in girth where people say, I look like I'm 9 months pregnant. You can have both of those things. You could have only one of those things, but certainly both can be quite uncomfortable.
And then where's that line? Because it's kind of a fine line sometimes between normal bloating and abnormal bloating, because I think a lot of people, females
class in particular, and I have this conversation a lot with my clients where they don't realize that a lot of bloating is actually very normal. Like if they go out and they have a large meal and they eat, you know, physically a more volume than they typically would normally eat, they might feel quite bloated. Or if they're, you know, a couple of days before their menstrual cycle's due, they might feel quite bloated. So where is that line between what we would consider normal bloating and what we would consider abnormal bloating, where we would then look for some sort of medical or dietetic intervention?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really great point to raise. And I have this conversation with a lot of my clients as well, because we don't ever expect you to be 0 out of 10 bloated 100% of the time. Like that's actually not a good sign either. So our normal bloating is that physical or that sensation that we would feel after having a meal or a big drink, if we're drinking carbonated beverages, you know, things that are actually depositing volume or mass into our digestive system. That's when we expect to see bloating, and we would typically expect that that would resolve by itself in a few hours. However, on the flip side, there are tons of people walking around with abnormal bloating where they have this really sudden onset of bloating. They can't necessarily put it down to eating, you know, a regular size meal or even a large meal. They can't put it down to things like carbonated drinks. It is chronic and persistent, and it starts to interrupt regular activities. Like if your bloating, for example, is having you unzip your pants in the middle of the day in between meetings. I remember when I was working in a physical clinic seeing clients, in between client appointments, if I had, whether it be a 10-minute gap or a 30-minute gap, the first thing to go was my zipper so that I could let my bloated belly out. Now, that's abnormal bloating. Or if you hop in the car to go home, the first thing you do is unzip your zipper. Or if it is impacting other daily activities, like the way that you dress in otherwise clothes that would fit you, or if it's interrupting your social life as well, wanting to go out and catch up with friends or family or go out and exercise, that's when we would suggest that bloating is not normal. But certainly some bloating is good and a sign of a healthy, active gut microbiome and digestive system. But where it doesn't resolve itself and where we see it chronic and persistent, that's when we start to consider, is there something else going on that we need to address from a medical or dietary perspective?
Mm. And also that type of bloating where you might wake up and, you know, your stomach feels okay, but it gets progressively worse throughout the day. And by the nighttime, like you mentioned, you might have to pull on your, you know, stretchy type of pants. You might have to be unbuttoning the button on your jean because you woke up and you felt okay, but you've progressively felt more and more bloated after each meal. Whereas we would normally say that normal bloating tends to decrease between meal times, doesn't it? You might have a lunch and feel a little bit bloated or distended, but that should go down again before you have dinner or before, you know, as your body utilizes the energy and uses up the fuel, then your stomach becomes empty again. And then you may feel, you know, quote unquote, fine before the next meal. That would be sort of considered normal again, wouldn't it?
Definitely. And I love to see things on social media changing. You know, over the last few years, we've seen more trends on Instagram Reels and on TikTok of women showing how their body changes over a 24-hour period when they do have meals, when they are drinking more water before and after exercise, and how your body changes. Like, we expect the shape of your body to change throughout the day. So I completely agree with everything that you've just said.
Yeah, love it. All right. And then we talked about, I guess, what we would consider more abnormal bloating or something that we would want to potentially get investigated to see if there is something up. What would be some, I guess, red flags, if we want to call it that, that bloating wouldn't be normal and that might send us to, say, our doctor or off to a dietitian to investigate, hey, is there something here that requires a little bit more, say, medical attention or intervention as such?
Mm. Our digestive system is always trying to tell us something. So I think it's important that we pay attention to it and look at, of course, the bloating, but are there any other symptoms that are associated with it as well? Like, have you had any funky bowel movements recently, whether it's, you know, more constipated, really hard to pass rabbit type bowel movements, or are you on the flip side, you know, you're passing more than 3 bowel movements per day? Maybe you're having a really difficult time with wiping because the stool is so loose and mucousy. That's something to pay attention to. Is, are there any other GI symptoms associated with the bloating that you're experiencing? And then some other things to look out for would be unexplained or unintentional weight loss or blood in the stool. These are some really important things to raise with your doctor if they do happen to come up, you know, somewhat regularly, like a little bit of blood in the stool can happen if you have more constipated, like bowel movements, or if you're wiping a lot. But if you're seeing really dark colored stools, it could indicate that there is a bleed higher up in your GI tract. And then if you're seeing blood regularly, fresh blood in your stool, really important to talk to your doctor. What do you think about those 3 points?
Yeah, I totally agree. And another one that I generally say to clients is any change in bowel patterns from your normal. So if you're normal and it's been, you know, you've kind of been constipated since you were a kid, if that's your normal, like I would definitely recommend seeing a dietitian because I do believe we could absolutely help you. But if that's your normal, that wouldn't be a cause for quote unquote concern in my books. But if you were somebody who was chronically constipated since a child and then all of a sudden you developed, as you said, blood in your stools and super loose stools and a lot of cramping and a lot of bloating, that to me would be like, okay, red flag, we need to go get this investigated.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And something else that has come to mind as well that you could pair with any of these would be if you're feeling consistently bloated, you have any of these other symptoms or situations arise, and you have a family history, whether it be of something like irritable bowel syndrome, inflammatory bowel disease, bowel cancer, celiac disease, really good idea also to bring that information to your doctor to talk through it.
Absolutely. And probably just a couple more off the top of my head, I would consider sort of red flags would be any sort of like night sweats, a serious drop in your energy levels, like constant fatigue. It could just indicate something, you know, not that, I guess, serious, such as low iron, but that's something you would want to get investigated. Like if you are someone who eats red meat, why do you have low iron? Why is your energy so poor? So I always think, like you mentioned, the blood in the stools, the unexplained weight loss or unintentional weight loss, any sort of night sweats, any sort of change from your normal bowel pattern, we would want to go and get investigated. And I think there's a large base of female listeners to the podcast, and it might just be a really nice reminder because a lot of the times we put everybody else first. And it might just be a reminder to think back on your health. And if there is anything different, is it time for a skin check? Is it, I know we're supposed to be talking about bloating, but it's a really nice little lead in for me to just remind our beautiful listeners, particularly our females who tend to look after everybody else first, go and get a health check with your doctor. If you haven't had bloods in the last 12 months, it's important to be aware of. Is your cholesterol high or low? What are your bowel patterns like? Are you losing weight? Are you gaining weight, quote unquote unexplained? That's something that we should probably be heading off to our doctor and getting further investigations for.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate that point. And I even think about myself personally sometimes. You know, I've got a cat. I take her to the vet every year to have a checkup, vaccinations. They check over her teeth. But something that I haven't done in a really long time is actually have my blood work done as well. Like, you know, I'm guilty of doing this. So what a timely reminder. Thanks, Leanne.
No worries. All right. And then when we're talking about abnormal bloating or thinking about that bloating that isn't normal, what do you feel like are the main causes for this?
There are so many triggers to bloating, as you are well aware. You see lots of it in your clinic as well. But I guess I'll probably categorize the main causes of bloating that I see into 3 different categories. I think the first one that I'm looking out for is often food intolerances. So a lot of the time I'm looking at FODMAPs, you know, fermentable carbohydrates that we find in foods. And of course, please go back to the recent podcast that we had recorded on IBS and FODMAPs to dive into that. We find FODMAPs in a lot of healthy foods. So things like onion and garlic and mangoes and sugar snap peas, honey, cashews, pistachios, we find them in cauliflower, mushrooms, like lots of fruits, vegetables, nuts, and seeds that we know to be really good for us, but they can be really difficult on sensitive stomachs. So I'm always looking out for FODMAPs, food intolerances. I'm looking out for different dietary patterns of someone's diet, you know, if people are skipping meals or if they are rushing through their meals, eating really quickly. So looking at those eating patterns and behaviors, and then actually taking a step outside of diet, but looking at the gut-brain communication. I feel like this is something that lots of people are tuning into recently and hearing more and more about, is that bi-directional communication between your gut and your brain, and how your brain actually interprets signals from the gut and either exacerbates that signal to interpret it as, you know, higher levels of pain. It can disturb digestion and the flow of everything throughout your system. Is there anything that you would add there, Leanne?
No, I think you've covered it all. Definitely. I think it's a really important concept. It's not so much just the food we eat, but some of our lifestyle factors and our stress and even our mind plays a large role on some of the symptoms that our body, I guess, develops, for lack of a better word.
And it can feel like a bit of a chicken or the egg situation for a lot of people that are struggling with bloating or gut issues in general. It's like, well, am I feeling stressed because of my bloating, or is my bloating causing me to be more stressed? And it just can continue to flow on from there. So something to be aware of. And I guess a lot of people could also probably relate to, you know, stressful situations and how it made them feel. Like, one that always gets me is getting to the airport on time, making sure you've tied off all your loose ends, whether it's for a short trip or a long international holiday, or sitting down for something like a job interview. You know, often your tummy feels quite tense, and then that can translate into gut symptoms too.
Yeah, exactly. Because we know that those emotions sometimes can link into the gut. And the one that always gets me is, I don't mind presenting. Like, I talk a lot. I'm a podcaster. I present, I do events, that sort of thing. But I always get that little bit nervous. And I always find myself running to the bathroom just before I have to get up on stage or present or something, which I know is that beautiful gut brain axis where we know that, you know, the body is a little bit stressed, a little bit kind of anxious. And that's flowing through to some of the symptoms that the gut's going to give us.
A very normal experience to have a nervous poo. Even if you're confident like yourself, I definitely get it.
How funny. All right. And then probably the other big main cause of abnormal bloating would be from a medical perspective, which is why we're, you know, highly recommending people go and get these things checked out, because it may be an underlying condition such as Crohn's disease or another type of inflammatory bowel disease, celiac disease, or it might be something, you know, it could just be, as we've said, like some unexplained weight loss, which has resulted in malnutrition, which can also bring about some gut symptoms as well, if we're not actually nourishing the body and giving it enough food. So definitely probably the biggest one is more of a medical condition that's been missed, or as you said, more of just a sensitive tummy and potentially like a food-based trigger.
And I guess to touch on that medical side of things, like, it is so easy to screen for some of these things now, like celiac disease and inflammatory bowel disease. Like, there's a lot of preliminary investigations that can be done exclusively through blood work, a simple blood test. You know, you don't necessarily have to go in and get an endoscopy, colonoscopy, gastroscopy straight away. Obviously, your doctor is going to guide you to find the best investigative route for you.
Yeah, wonderful. All right. And then we might go down more the food sensitivity route, because that's something obviously you work with a lot and you're very skilled in, because I think we'll leave the medical route for the medical professional. So we're absolutely recommending everybody go and first get your medical assessment done by a doctor. And if everything comes back quote unquote normal and they say, right, the bloating's very likely related to, you know, food intolerances or you being a little bit, you know, funny with different foods, that's where we would love to send that client to a dietitian such as yourself to do some work with. So what are your expert tips when it comes to, I guess, food being the cause of abnormal bloating?
I guess number one, please do not cut out any particular food group without guidance. If you're going to go completely gluten-free, dairy-free, it may alleviate symptoms for a short period of time because it reduces your intake of particular triggers within those foods. However, in the vast majority of cases, if this is a food intolerance, you don't need to cut out that entire food group. So let's take gluten, for example, or wheat, I should say, for example. If you remove all gluten or wheat from your diet, you are often also taking away a lot of B vitamins and also dietary fiber, where we know that people that often have a reaction to wheat are reacting to the fructans in wheat, which is that particular FODMAP or fermentable carbohydrate. Now, you can have low FODMAP wheat products such as traditionally fermented sourdough bread. You can still have things like even pretzels, which are made from wheat flour. It is really dose dependent. So please don't get rid of all of your gluten or all of your wheat unnecessarily. And the same can be said for things like lactose or dairy containing products, I should say. If you get rid of 100% of the dairy from your diet, you're going to be cutting back significantly on your intake of things like protein, calcium, and more B vitamins as well. We know that even people diagnosed with severe lactose intolerance, often they can still tolerate a small serving of things like cheese and butter because they are so low naturally in lactose. So don't cut out a whole food group. But what I would suggest you start off by doing is keeping a really clear food and symptom diary, and do this for at least a week. track the things that you are eating, you're drinking, of course, your symptoms, like look at your bloating, how often you are passing bowel movements, and if you feel satisfied with your bowel movements. And you can also track a few other things, like if you have your period, your exercise, your stress levels, how much you're sleeping as well. So then you can start to draw correlations. Now, I appreciate that this is not going to give you like instant relief from bloating, or it's not going to give you all of the answers right away, but it's going to give you some really valuable information to what a week in your life actually looks like on paper. So you can start to draw those correlations. And then should you decide to see a dietitian, which I encourage everyone that has the capacity to do so, do, you can bring that information to your dietitian and say, look, I've got this food diary already. And so in your first appointment, you get some really practical strategies after that first consultation.
Yeah, that's an awesome tip, because it's sort of like you're starting on the front foot forward if you're taking all this information, which a dietitian would typically send a client away to do. If you come with all that information, as you said, you're going to leave with practical strategies versus leaving with maybe try this and do a food diary, then come back and see me in, say, 2 weeks' time or something. So I love that tip. That's really practical.
Yeah, accelerate your progress. And it allows you to have a little look at what's going on before you even get there.
We're interrupting this podcast to bring you a quick update from today's episode sponsor, Garmin. The Venue 3S is Garmin's latest hybrid smartwatch that is a perfect blend of function and style. Purpose-built with advanced health and fitness features and the ability to make calls and send texts, the Venue 3S is more than just a fitness smartwatch. It's your personal on-wrist coach there to support your every goal. It gives you detailed health and wellness insights such as body battery energy monitoring, sleep coaching, a morning report, nap detection, stress tracking, a pulse ox sensor, women's health and pregnancy tracking, meditation, mindful breathing, and even a jet lag advisor. With 30 plus sports apps, animated workouts, and a Garmin coach, you can train purposely and effectively. The Venue 3S is built for how you move. It can track pushes and offers built-in workouts designed for wheelchair users. With up to 10 days of battery life in smartwatch mode, the Venue 3S fitness smartwatch is able to give you a more complete picture of your health. Head over to garmin.com.au to find out more. Now let's get back to our podcast episode. And now any, I guess, big food or liquid triggers that you typically see which promote more bloating? So off the top of my head, I know that when I've had clients who have a ton of artificial sweeteners, like a lot of sugar-free type products, chewing sugar-free gum a lot, mints, they might have a lot of sugar-free soft drinks, and then also excessive amounts of coffee and alcohol. I know those things do tend to promote A, diarrhea, and B, a little bit of bloating as well in some more sensitive tummies. So they might be an area for our listeners not to cut out, but to cut back on and see if that makes bloating or bowels any better. Any, I guess, foods off the top of your head that you know of that typically trigger quite a lot of bloating in sensitive people?
Yes, and I'm like so guilty of this. I don't know if you have seen any of the like no added sugar sweets that are on the market at the moment. I was really kindly gifted some a few weeks ago, and it was only after I had consumed a bag of them that I checked the ingredients list, and my stomach blew up like a balloon, and I knew exactly why. They had 7 grams of dietary fiber in a tiny little packet, like the size of a deck of cards, and it was packed with inulin or chicory root fiber, which is a prebiotic fiber that often gets added to foods to help thicken it. It can improve the taste, the texture of a product. It's often found in granolas or snack bars, but they have put it into these like low sugar sweets, but it's really irritating for people that have a sensitive stomach. So inulin, chicory root fiber, that's always one of the ingredients that I'm looking out for in packaged goods for my clients. And lo and behold, I should be checking for myself as well, but sometimes I forget until it's too late.
Guess what? We're only human, aren't we?
Completely agree. They taste great, but it's definitely a sometimes thing because it was uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I would definitely say that I am very sensitive to chicory root as well. Whenever I buy a box of like muesli bars or snack bars, even if I'm like running through the airport, I'm hungry, I'll quickly pick it up, scan the label. And if I see chicory root on the label, I'm like, hard no for me. No, thank you.
Put it back. And definitely not a good airplane snack, that's for sure.
Not if you have a sensitive tummy. If not, you go for gold. But if you do have a sensitive tummy, perhaps not. Yeah, it's a good one to scan your labels for. Now, in my gut health clinic, I often see a lot of clients complaining of bloating, but I often see constipation as an underlying, I guess, issue or reason for bloating. Like when you think about it, if your bowels aren't moving properly, if they're sluggish, if things aren't moving through properly, obviously it's going to hang around in your gut, be very sluggish for a little while longer. That's going to obviously contribute to the bloating. So what are your top tips to help with constipation? Because I feel like for a large majority of people, if you fix the constipation, a lot of the bloating can be resolved as well. Not so much for our sensitive tummies, our IBS more clients, but more so for just the, I guess, quote unquote, average person who is just a bit sluggish and constipated and might experience some random bloating here and there. If we can fix that, it generally, would you agree in your experience, helps the bloating as well?
Yeah, could not agree more. I think if you even think about it physiologically, the more stool or waste you have in your gut, the more bloating that you're going to be experiencing, or the more distension of your gut you'll be experiencing. And if you're passing a regular bowel movement, you're, you know, not only eliminating, you're eliminating waste as you're putting more food into the system, which just means that you're going to have that nice equilibrium of feeling good. But if you're not passing regular bowel movements, you're also going to have stool sitting in your colon, which means it's going to be fermenting more, producing more gas and wind. So we really want to get your bowels moving. There's so much that can be done from a dietary perspective. I always feel so pleased and like somewhat shocked still how diet can influence constipation so successfully and so quickly. There's three pillars that I really like to look at. To begin with, I'll look at a client's overall intake of fluid. That is really important, you know, especially as the seasons change, where we go from winter to summer, we need to make sure we're increasing our fluid intake because we're losing more fluid likely through sweat, and vice versa. When we're going into winter, sometimes it's difficult to keep on top of our fluid intake because it's cold and we don't feel like drinking. But my recommendation for the majority of my clients is to aim for about 30 milliliters per kilogram of body weight of fluid per day. Doesn't have to be water. It can be teas. It can be coffee. It can be things like juices. It doesn't have to be water, but certainly making sure you're getting adequate overall fluid is really important. And if anyone's tuning in from the US as well, I typically would recommend half fluid ounce per pound of body weight is a similar calculation for you. I want to make sure that you're getting adequate dietary fiber. We know that the fiber gives the bulk to the stool, can help move things along, making sure you're getting plenty of fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, and grains. But I guess the catch is we don't want you to be having too much dietary fiber and then not enough fluid. So that's why we're looking at those two components and getting a really nice balance between the two. And then the third element is regular physical activity or movement. And it doesn't have to be anything crazy. Like walking has been shown to be incredibly effective for improving constipation. For there's been tons of studies into IBS and exercise as well, and we know that people that increase their step count from 4,500 to 9,000 steps per day experience a reduction in overall IBS symptoms. Exercise is really good for your digestive tract, whether it's something like walking or if you find running to be comfortable, getting in that regular movement. They're the three things that I would start off looking at. Would you add anything there, Leanne?
No, I think as a baseline, that they're great points, and they're definitely what I would start with for my clients as well. Fiber, fluid, physical activity, and all of those three things. If a client says, look, I'm already ticking all the boxes, then of course there's other interventions to try. But when you think about it, 90% of Australians aren't eating enough vegetables. I mean, we could start there to increase our dietary fiber, can't we? And even fruit, like you see the amount of people online who are saying fruit's bad, it's got too much sugar. Like, you know, the recommendations
carrots.
Again.
When someone said carrots have too much sugar, I'm like, well, what the hell can
you know, so just hitting the recommended amounts of fruits and vegetables every day and just trying to drink a couple of extra cups of water. And, you know, before you have your breakfast, lunch or dinner, have a large cup of water. And then after the meal, have another large cup. If you know you're someone that struggles with fluid, when you think about it, bowels aren't going to move properly if you're not putting in enough fiber to move it through, because fiber can act like a broom. The water helps to soften the stool and help easily pass it. And then physical activity helps to just, again, get everything moving, because when you're active, when you're up and you're moving, the blood's flowing through, the, you know, waste products are flowing through as well. It makes so much sense when people think about it, but in reality, they're more difficult things to do, particularly if we're busy. Or probably the only thing I will add is regular meals. I see a lot of my ladies who are busy. They're trying to get the kids out of the door in the morning. They're skipping breakfast. They're grabbing a coffee on the run. Lunch, they're working at their computer. They're having two bites of something. They're running off to a meeting. It gets to 4 or 5 p.m. and they've barely had more than a few bites of something plus a coffee or two. And that's all. If you're not putting regular fuel into your body, that digestive tract isn't going to move through regularly either, is it?
Yeah, that signal is not fired that waste needs to move on because more food is coming through. It slows things down. You're absolutely right.
All right. And then there's a lot of talk online about what is termed gut dysbiosis, essentially. So like an imbalance of gut bacteria and also bloating. What are your thoughts around this? Are you hearing that a lot in your clinic? Do you get a lot of referrals coming through for gut dysbiosis?
I don't necessarily see referrals for gut dysbiosis, but it's a conversation that I'm having regularly with my clients is that gut dysbiosis can refer to a gut microbiome that is imbalanced. And we don't know what the perfect gut microbiome looks like right now, but we know that the more diverse populations of bacteria that we have in our gut, the better. It's really protective for us, in fact. So anytime I'm working with a client, we're looking to add more diversity into your diet in the way of different plant-based foods, whether it be fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, grains, herbs, and spices, so that we can really nourish and nurture the gut microbiome so we can get it to be more diverse and we can have it, you know, flourish and improve overall gut symptoms as well. There certainly is a link between, you know, very restrictive diets that don't have much diversity, likely of a narrow range of bacteria that live within the gut and more bloating. So there's certainly a correlation. I guess we can't put any specific advice as to what foods you should exactly eat to improve your gut, to improve bloating, but we know that more variety, the better.
Love it. All right. And then I'd love to hear your thoughts on, here's a curly one for you, laxatives or colon cleansing to assist with bloating. Because again, you see it a lot online and the colon cleansing is the one that really gets me. And I think you actually couldn't pay me to do that, but you do see it touted a lot online as a quick fix for bloating and also laxatives. I do have a lot of clients who in their past have tried to resolve a lot of their, I guess, gut issues, bloating in particular, just by using some laxatives. And then it's something that you kind of go down this slippery slope where once you start, it's very difficult to kind of get off it, isn't it?
Definitely. It is a slippery slope and it's something that you can become like very reliant on. You know that it's going to work, the laxatives in particular, to produce a bowel movement, reduce that bloating. But why are we not addressing the root cause and trying to figure out why you are getting constipated or why you are having that bloating in the first place, instead of relying on this band-aid solution, which is likely doing you harm in the long term? And I am the biggest advocate for not getting a colon cleanse. I think it's a really popular topic for people that have done it or are really interested in getting it, because often it's like a last ditch effort. They are desperate for some relief, but there are so many risks that come along with something like a colon cleanse. Like, they're often performed in these clinics that don't necessarily have staff that are trained to the standard that should be operating these heavy pieces of machinery and, you know, inserting them into places that, you know, quite literally, the sun doesn't shine. It poses risks of disturbing your gut microbiome. It poses risks of perforating your bowel, like quite literally putting a hole through your colon. Like, none of this sounds good. Regular poops are good and, you know, reducing bloating is good, but we shouldn't be relying on laxatives and we shouldn't be relying on colon cleansers to get there. I like to refer to vegetables as colon cleansers. Like, anytime I have a big salad or I do a roast vegetable tray bake and I have lots of variety in there, I'm like, oh, I'm just having my colon cleanse. And like, I make that joke because fiber from fruits and vegetables does cleanse your colon. Like, it helps pass things along. So I wish more people gravitated towards, you know, dietary intervention, you know, talking to their doctor, their exercise physiologist about all the different things that can be done before we necessarily need to use laxatives or go for like colon hydrotherapy, whatever they're doing. But I guess all of that being said, laxatives have a place. We've got several different types of laxatives, including osmotic laxatives and stimulant laxatives. And I think in the right circumstances, laxatives can be appropriate, but it's really important that you're, you know, using them under the guidance of your doctor or the pharmacist, and you're not using these as a band-aid solution.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. And then thinking about our bloating sufferers again, what are your tips if they were eating out or socializing besides just not wearing tight jeans? Because for a very long time before I got my IBS under control, I just wouldn't wear tight jeans if I went out to dinner. But, you know, sometimes we like to look nice and tight jeans may be the outfit of choice. So what would be your tips if somebody was eating out or socializing and was very prone to becoming quite bloated after a nice meal out?
Yeah, you're allowed to wear what you want and you want to feel really good in what you're wearing as well. So I actually do have one really practical strategy for anyone listening, and I've got some right here. So I'm not sure if you'll be able to see if there's any video that's going to go along with this as well. But what I've got here is a pant extender. Now, I believe that these were originally created for pregnant women so that they could still wear their jeans when they, you know, went through pregnancy and their belly expanded. But essentially, it's a piece of elastic with one button at one end and some holes through it, and you will connect the button on your jeans to one end, and then you'll be able to do your pants up with the other end with the button that they have added to it. So pant extenders are one of my favorite things to keep in my bag
so
and tell
great.
My clients to pick up. They are super, super cheap, easy to get as well.
Where do you get them? Like Amazon?
I love these. I bought these on Amazon.
Yeah.
Yes,
oh,
online.
Amazon.
However, if you don't have this, use a hair tie. It can be tied around the button on your jeans, and you can do essentially the same thing. And if you need to, you can use two together. So pant extenders are probably one of my favorite tips if you are bloated and you want to wear those jeans instead of having to sit at the dining table or out in a restaurant with your pants like somewhat undone and your shirt pulled over. I've done that too many times.
I've been there too. No judgment.
I think like we all have, right? And you can have a little giggle with your girlfriends when you do it, or, you know, whoever you're out with. So that's my number one tip, but you can also use some really helpful over-the-counter things as well. I like to recommend peppermint oil capsules. They can be really excellent to help soothe your gut and help any trapped wind or gas pass. Or simply sip on some peppermint tea, whether it be over dessert, you know, the restaurant or cafe is likely to have some, or sip on some peppermint tea when you get home to soothe your stomach.
And then there's a lot of talk as well going down more that supplement route. What about a beer gas? Like, you hear a lot about it. I remember must be 10, 15 years ago when my gastro, quote unquote, diagnosed me with IBS. He was like, go try some Iberogast. Is that still something that's recommended?
Iberogast is still available. It's still recommended. Sometimes I'll use it with my clients. It just has a bit of an offensive taste and it's a little bit more difficult to take when you are out and about. So sometimes I'll get my clients to use it. Some of them love it, but others hate it. So I've really got to be picky about who I recommend it to.
Yeah, the taste is not delicious, is it?
No, it's offensive. That's what I would say.
And then sticking with the supplements, I guess, what about pre and probiotics? Because we do hear a lot, particularly around probiotics for, you know, gut disturbances, I guess, particularly for bloating. Is there much research behind probiotics for bloating? Is there a particular strain or type that you would recommend if somebody does have regular occurrences of bloating?
There are several strains which have been studied extensively now, which we know help with overall IBS symptoms. We know there are some that help with constipation, some with diarrhea, antibiotic associated diarrhea, bloating, all of the above. There's one strain in particular that I really like to use, Bacillus coagulans. That's one that I'll use in my clinic, but quite frankly, I don't use that from the very beginning when I meet someone. It's typically at the very end of the process when we have typically resolved their symptoms. We've identified their particular food triggers or the eating patterns, which were, you know, counterproductive for their goals, that I might say, okay, well, if you want to start a probiotic, this is the one that I would suggest. However, you're doing quite well without, you don't need to be taking this. So there are options available, but I don't like to rely on them as a band-aid solution. I don't want you to be taking a probiotic forever. And the same can be said for prebiotic fibers as well. We get a lot of prebiotics from our diet if we're eating a range of fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, and grains. So I prefer to get that prebiotic fiber from the diet. But of course, we can always supplement with something like partially hydrolyzed guar gum, which is generally really well tolerated with people or by people that have a sensitive stomach.
Love it. Yeah, I'm a big fan of acacia gum as well. I find that that's much more gentle than the other two we talked about before, chicory root and inulin, which we know that a lot of IBS sufferers, us included, do not do very well with. All right, Chelsea. And then I appreciate your time, so I'm not going to take up too much more of your valuable time. But to end the potty, what I would love to know is if there were one to two things that you would recommend to help our listeners improve their bloating quickly, what would they be? And you've already mentioned the peppermint tea or the peppermint capsules, which are handy things we can carry around in our handbag. Any other quick tips that you feel like might help resolve bloating?
So I love the peppermint tea, love the peppermint oil capsules. Like, that's your I need it right now type solution, and can be quite effective. But you could also consider diaphragmatic breathing, which is getting you out of that, you know, short, sharp, shallow breathing to really take a step back, take a moment, breathe in, you know, for four counts or longer, hold, and then breathe out, and do this over a series of a couple of minutes to really help reduce your heart rate. It can help calm your central nervous system and in fact improve that communication between the gut and the brain through the vagus nerve. And that can really help reduce bloating. It can help prevent the onset of bloating if you do consume a meal that has some irritating foods in it. So they're the sort of I need help right now type solutions. But I would encourage anyone listening to this that is struggling with bloating is to consider a long-term approach as well. And like working with a dietitian, it might take 3 to 4 months to, you know, finalize the FODMAP process if that's what you're doing, or truly identify your gut triggers. But in the grand scheme of your life, what is 3 or 4 months of a time investment when you could gain back so much more time with your friends, your family, doing things you love without worrying about bloating? So that would be my 2 cents on what you can do to reduce bloating now.
Yeah, I love it. All right, Chelsea. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Now, if our listeners would like to contact you, book a consult with you, where can they find you?
Absolutely. I would love to get to know you a little bit better. You can get to know me more. My Instagram handle is IBS_dietitian. I share tons of information on that page, all about IBS, the low FODMAP diet, bloating, constipation, diarrhea, like all of the above. I can't stop talking about shit. So if you like, come and follow me on Instagram. My TikTok handle is exactly the same. Got tons of freebies on there if you'd like to learn a little bit more about my approach.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us, Chelsea. Hope to have you back on another day soon.
Thank you so much, Leanne. Take care.